My name is Sebastian de Kies, and I'm a PhD student at SAP Research and the University of Bochum in Germany. And today I would like to present the joint work of these two institutions, and it's about clickjacking. More specifically, we looked into current clickjacking protection schemes, so schemes that can be deployed to counter such clickjacking attacks, and we found a lot of limitations. But before I go into details, I would have a short look on the agenda. So in the beginning, I will explain what clickjacking is and how such a clickjacking attack looks like. Then I will talk about the current defensive mechanisms that we have that we can deploy to counter such an attack. And while investigating these techniques, we found a lot of open issues. So we found some situations where these techniques are not applicable. And on the other hand, we found several vulnerabilities within these techniques. In order to assess whether these vulnerabilities are rather widespread or not, we conducted an empirical study and crawled about 2 million HTML documents, and found out that it is very likely to be possible to exploit such vulnerabilities in the wild. And in the end, I will give a short conclusion. But let's start at the beginning. So what is clickjacking? So basically, clickjacking, that is also called UI redressing, is an attack that lures a user into clicking on something that is different to what he perceives. In other words, it's about stealing clicks. So an attacker would like to lure a user into clicking something that he doesn't want to click. Here you can see a setup in which such a clickjacking attack can take place. So you have a browser, and in front of the browser, you have the user that is controlling the browser. And only recently, the user logged on to his favorite banking application at mybank.org. And as he didn't log out, there is an authentication cookie that authenticates the user to the mybank.org application, and the user is therefore able to conduct state-changing actions at the user interface that is provided by mybank.org. In order to attack mybank.org with a clickjacking attack, the attacker first has to lure the user onto an attacker control page. Here we call it attacker.org. So the user is now on attacker.org, and what the attacker first has to do, he has to render the UI of mybank.org in a controllable container. So such a controllable container could, for example, be an iframe, it could be an object or an embed tag, or it could be a pop-up window. So here in this example, we assume he's using an iframe, and therefore the mybank.org user interface is rendered, and as the creation of the iframe triggers an HTTP request within the browser, the cookies are automatically attached to it, and therefore the user is authenticated and is able to conduct some state-changing actions. So he is able to transfer some money by clicking a button. What the attacker has to do next is to disguise this API, disguise this UI so that the user is not able to perceive it. He can do this by using several methods. So for example, he can cover the iframe with several other elements. He could reduce the size of the iframe so that the user is not able to spot it. He could display it only a very short amount of time, only for a few milli or microseconds, or he could simply make it transparent. And we assume here, in this attack, the attacker makes the iframe transparent, so the user is not able to perceive that there is actually the mybank.org user interface. What the attacker has to do next is to lure the user into interacting with the attacker page. So for example, he displays a very nice message, and says, well, you can get a free iPod if you click this button. And he creates a button directly underneath the transfer money button. And as the transfer money button is not visible, it is transparent, the user will only see the button to win his free iPod. So if the user now clicks on the free iPod, the click does not hit the click to win button, but actually he clicks the transfer money button and triggers some state-changing actions on the mybank.org interface. And this is a very undesirable behavior. We don't want to have attacker.org to be able to cause some state-changing actions on mybank.org. Therefore, several countermeasures arose. And here we have client-side and server-side approaches. Thereby, a client-side approach is deployed within the user's browser and detects one user against attacks on all applications that are rendered within this browser. And one famous example for such a client-side countermeasure is the NoScript ClearClick plugin. But we also have some other countermeasures, such as Guarded ID. We have some research projects. One is called Gazelle, the other one is the OP web browser, and the next one is a secure browser that some have some techniques to counter such clickjacking attacks. Server-side approaches are a little bit different. So they are deployed on the server side by the webmaster, and they protect one web application against such attacks, and the enforcement takes place on the client side. Examples for such countermeasures are frame busting, the X-frame options header, and earlier revisions of the content security policy. What I would like to do now is to go through all of these countermeasures and to explain how they function to later see where the open issues are. So let's start with the client-side ones, and here is ClearClick. So the basic idea of ClearClick is very simple. So it wants to prevent clicks on obfuscated cross-domain iframe or object or embed elements. And it does this by having two rules. So when a click happens on such a cross-domain element, it checks whether the element is invisible or nearly invisible, and whether it overlaps with other elements. So if there's a button behind the iframe, that could be potentially be clicked. And if it detects such a situation, it blocks the click and asks the user if he really would like to conduct this action or not. And the user can choose to cancel or to continue. Alternatively, we have some other approaches. For example, guarded ID, which is quite similar to NoScript ClearClick, is also a browser plugin. As I already told, we have some research projects that have some mechanisms deployed on the client side. But as these mechanisms are not widely used in practice, I will not go into further details. One of the first countermeasures that we have on the server side is called frame busting. The basic idea of frame busting is also very easy. It is to avoid unauthorized framing of a web page. So if we can prevent the framing, the attacker cannot conduct his clickjacking attack. And the implementation is done by a small snippet of JavaScript. Here you can see the script, and it's basically very easy, as I said. It just checks whether a framing situation is present by checking whether there is a parent frame that is different to the own frame. And if so, it conducts a redirect of the parent frame. So basically, the frame page busts out of the frame by loading itself into the top frame of the browser. However, this is a very naive implementation of such a frame buster that can be circumvented in many ways. So in order to circumvent this, you can basically take two different approaches. So the first approach is you could prevent the JavaScript execution. And if this script is not executed, the frame busting will not take place and the countermeasure will not work. And basically you can do that by misusing modern cross-site scripting filters or by using HTML5 sandboxed iframes where you can deactivate the JavaScript in the attacker page. The other approach you can take is to prevent the redirect. So here the script triggers a redirect of the parent frame, and there are basically three different methods how you can do that. One technique is called 204 flushing, then we have a technique called double framing, or you can simply ask the user. So on the JavaScript on before unload event, you can just ask the user, would you really like to leave the website? And if the user presses no, he stays on the website and the frame buster failed. Although this implementation here is vulnerable to all of these attacks, it is possible to build secure frame busters. However, the knowledge is not really widespread. So we conducted an empirical study, and there we mostly found frame busters that look like this one. So this is secure frame busters are not really used in practice. Okay, so let's come to the server-side countermeasures. So to the next countermeasures to improve the situation, Microsoft introduced the so-called X-frame options header. And the X-frame options header is very similar to frame busting. The idea is also to avoid unauthorized framing of a web page. But this header is not implemented as a JavaScript function, but as an HTTP response header. So when a webmaster does not want a specific site to be framed by other sites, he can add this X-frame options header and thereby specify two different values. So for one, he can specify same origin, then only same origin resources are allowed to frame this page. Or you can say deny, then framing is forbidden. And the browser will enforce this header on the client side. In Internet Explorer, we have a third header value that is called from origin. And from origin allows you to specify exactly one location that is allowed to frame the current page. So you're also able to do some cross-domain framing. But as this is only implemented in Internet Explorer, this is not a practical solution that we can use in productive application. Very similar to this, from origin value. There was a directive in the novel content security policy that was called Frame Ancestors, and this was worked very similar to the From Origin header, but as there were some problems with the implementation, it was skipped and is not part of the content security policy anymore. Therefore, I will also not go into further details. So now we know about the client and server-side countermeasures against click checking, and now I would like to talk about open issues. So at first, I would like to talk about areas of non-applicability. So if you think about all of these countermeasures, we can say that they have one big thing in common. So they all focus on framing. And the idea is to prevent unauthorized framing, to prevent clickjacking. While unauthorized framing is same domain framing, authorized framing is same domain framing, unauthorized framing is cross-domain framing. So the basic assumption of all of these mechanisms is if we can prevent cross-domain framing, we can prevent clickjacking. But then the question arises, what do we do if we need cross-domain framing? So if cross-domain framing is a requirement of the application. In these situations, we are at the moment not able to defend against clickjacking. And such situation we have, for example, in corporate portal environments. So we at SAP sell corporate portals, and our customers sometimes require us, our portal, to be framed by other web applications. And we also have these situations in ad provider networks where ads have to be shown on other websites in the name of the ad provider. And one famous example here where it also doesn't work is, for example, the PayPal Facebook application, which uses a frame on Facebook.com. So this is a cross-domain frame that could not deploy any of the countermeasures to stop clickjacking attacks. On the other hand, we also have situations where clickjacking is not limited to frames. So we see novel attacks, for example, the double clickjacking, and also a technique called clickjacking via history navigation that use pop-up windows instead of frames. And therefore, also the current countermeasures do not work for these situations. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to explain those two techniques, but if you have any questions, you can approach me after the talk. So now I would like to go over to the vulnerabilities and start with the ClearClick plugin. So as I already told you, ClearClick uses two basic rules to detect such a clickjacking attack, and these rules are that an element that is a cross-domain element that the user clicks on is almost invisible, and that it somehow overlaps with other clickable elements. So if these two rules are matched and are found by ClearClick, the attack is stopped. So by circumventing one of these rules, you can basically circumvent ClearClick. And there are a lot of different exploits to do that, but I will show three of them. One was discovered by a researcher called Christoph Kotovic, and the two others were discovered by us. So the first technique is called cursor checking, and this avoids the overlapping of elements. The idea of cursor checking is that in the browser you have the cursor that the user sees, and you make this cursor invisible so that the user is not able to see it anymore via CSS, and then you display a fake cursor on another position. So the user sees the fake cursor and is lured into clicking, and he used the fake cursor, but in reality he clicks with another cursor that is on the other position. So you can place the elements and you don't have the need to overlap for the clickjacking attack. And therefore we can circumvent ClearClick in this situation. The second attack that was discovered by us that uses invalid SVG filters to hide an element. And this attack avoids the transparency detection of ClearClick. So by specifying an invalid SVG filter, some browsers tend to make the element invisible. So you can specify such a filter like here, just put an invalid URL into the filter, and then the browser will not render the element. However, for ClearClick, the element is perfectly visible because all of the other methods that ClearClick used to detect if it is visible showed that the opacity is good and the element is not transparent. So ClearClick did not stop the attack when using such an element. And the third attack I will skip because of timing reasons, and I can just say it involves drag and drop operation of style sheets where you can make a frame visible, the contents of a frame invisible and not the frame itself, and therefore also ClearClick will fail. Okay, now let's come to another vulnerability that we found. It's the vulnerability targeting the X-frame options header, and basically it's a vulnerability that takes place in the HTML5 offline application cache of Safari. So the offline application cache is a mechanism to make web applications available in offline scenarios. And what you do as a website, you can tell the browser to store certain HTML documents. And the nice thing is, whenever something is stored in the cache, it will always be loaded from the cache, even if there is an internet connection, so even if you are online. And with this technique, you can significantly reduce your bandwidth consumption. However, what Safari did, they only stored the HTML body of the page, but not the response headers. So any page that is loaded from cache will not have any response headers attached to it. And therefore, such a page cannot be protected by the extreme options header because it is lost. Although the page was outfitted with the extreme options header, it is not present anymore. And at first, if we think about this vulnerability, we can say, well, Safari is not very widely spread. But if we think about the HTML5 offline cache, we can see that this cache is mainly used in mobile application. As I just said, it is used to transfer the bandwidth consumptions of web applications. And therefore, a lot of mobile applications use this functionality. For example, the mobile version of Gmail does, and also the mobile version of Hotmail. And both of these applications also utilize the extreme options header to prevent clickjacking attacks. So basically, both of these applications are not defended against clickjacking if you view them on your iPad or your iPhone. Okay, so then we discovered another vulnerability within this extreme options header that we call nested clickjacking. So here you have a site that's called victim.com. And victim.com would like to protect against clickjacking and therefore deploys this extreme options same origin header. So what happens if an attacker tries to frame this website? Well, it's not the same origin. It's attackerpage.com and victim.com, and therefore the browser will stop the rendering process. However, this xframe options header only checks the origin of the top frame. So if you're somehow able to get a frame on victim.com that is controlled by you, you can circumvent the xframe options same origin header because it only checks the top frame. And we found one very popular famous example where that can be done. So here you see a blog of one of our co-authors, and we embedded an iframe element pointing to google.de. And as you see, Google is protected by the extreme options header, and the browser will not render this iframe. However, let's see what happens if we display this page within the Google image search. So here we searched an image on the page, and suddenly we see that the frame shows up and the extreme options header is not working anymore correctly, and this page could now conduct a clickjacking attack against the Google page on all pages on google.de. Okay, so in order to assess how widespread this attack could be, so how many sites are vulnerable to the nested clickjacking attack, and also how widespread the countermeasures are that I just explained, we conducted an empirical study, and this is what I would like to present next. So in order to assess this, we decided to crawl the Alexa top 20,000 websites, and including the first level subpages. So we crawled the main pages, collected all the links on the main pages, and also crawled them. This resulted in about 2 million web pages that we crawled. 1.1 million were successfully crawled. And we had several research questions in mind. So on the one hand, we wanted to know how many websites make use of such countermeasures, how many websites use the frame busters, how many website use xframe options headers, and how many websites use the CSP to prevent clickjacking attacks. And on the other hand, we wanted to know how many websites have cross-domain frames deployed. So how many websites are basically vulnerable to the nested clickjacking attack that I just presented. And in the end, we also wanted to know how many websites were framed across domains and are therefore not able to deploy the xframe options header. Because as I told you, if you forbid cross-domain framing, some applications cannot work anymore. So here's a general overview of our results. So in total, we were able to we were able to identify 3,000 websites that made use of such countermeasures, of basically of 20,000 websites. And here we see that the X-Frame options header was used by about 1,000 websites. Frame busting was used by about 2,200 websites. And CSP was still used by two websites, although it is deprecated. And what was an interesting observation is that those countermeasures are not used throughout a complete page, but only to some neuralgic spots. So mostly the main websites of these, main web pages of these websites were not protected by the X-Frame options header or by frame busting, but only some sub pages, for example, the login page or the password reset page, and so on and so forth. So this shows that there is some inflexibility in these mechanisms. So webmasters do not deploy them widely, but only to some really neuralgic spots. As I already told you, we are also interested in the framing behavior. So we wanted to know how many frames there are in the web and how many pages are framed across domain boundaries and how many pages use cross domain boundaries. Thereby, we found out that about 15,000 of these 20,000 pages used frame elements. And in total, we found 4 million of them. So we found about 200 frames per website, so on all the subpages, and about 2.1 frames per web page, so per HTML document. And over 70% of them pointed to cross-domain resources. So these are potentially vulnerable to the nested click-checking attacks. So for example, advertisements or other frames. So as I already told you, the nested click-checking attack only applies to the X-Frame option's same origin value. And therefore, we compared the numbers for this header, and we found out that 72% of all the sites utilizing such a header also use same origin. So it's very likely that the nested click-checking attack can be exploited on other sites than the Google image search. And furthermore, we also wanted to know about the applicability of these countermeasures. So we wanted to know if there are a lot of applications having that are framed across domain boundaries and therefore cannot use these headers. And in that set of 4 million domains, we found exactly 70,496 unique domains that were framed across domain boundaries and therefore cannot deploy those headers. And here's a list of the 10 most common ones. So very obviously this Facebook and the like button that is implemented via frame. Then we have Baidu, which is a search provider, I think. Then we have a lot of advertisements and also the Google Plus button and also some other like buttons and share buttons and so on. Okay, so we see that a lot of sites using this and therefore cannot be protected. Therewith, I would like to conclude this talk. So I just presented you the click-checking attack. I explained what click-checking is, and that click-checking is about hijacking clicks of a user. I explained the protection mechanisms to you. There are server-side and client-side ones. For the client-side ones, we have clear-click and the like. And on the server-side, we have frame-busting, the X-Frame options header, and CSP. And all of these techniques focus on preventing framing to prevent click-checking attacks. And as I just showed, that a lot of these techniques are not applicable in many cases, and therefore many web applications cannot be protected against click-checking, and that there are also some severe vulnerabilities that can be used to circumvent the protective measures. We conducted an empirical study, and thereby we found out that the click-checking protection is only applied to neuralgic spot and not to the whole websites. And a possible interpretation of this is that the current mechanisms are not too flexible and cannot be used in a more flexible way. And I think we need to rethink how click-checking really works. So at the moment, we only focus on that framing thing, and we need to get rid of that frame-based solutions and rather think about more general solutions. And for example, instead of such a X-Frame options header, we rather need something like an X-Viewport options and the like to get rid of this attack. Okay, so thank you very much for your attention. And now, please feel free to ask questions if you might have any.
Okay. So I have a question, actually. Could you elaborate a little more on what you think is the right solution for clickjacking attacks, or what a web developer today should do if they want to protect against clickjacking, if they like the like button, for example, if they still want to be framed?
Well, this is a very difficult question, and I think you have to distinguish between certain situations. So we need to distinguish between the like button, which is basically used for like checking, and between clickjacking. And it depends very much on the situation. And we developed a mechanism to counter such attacks, and it was also in the paper. But during the review process, we discovered two ways to circumvent it, and therefore we took it out of the place. And we are working on it and trying to fix it and then publish it. And it's more flexible and allows not only the to deny cross-domain framing or not, but to tell exactly which site are allowed to frame you. You can say, well, the trusted application.com is allowed to frame me, and untrusted application is not allowed to frame. And I think we need to have something like this, and we need to take other viewport constellations into consideration. So we do not only need to focus on frames, but also, for example, on pop-up attacks, and research further what else there is. So what other UI redressing attacks we have that could be used to conduct such attacks.
Any other questions?
Yeah, hi. Brad Hill with PayPal and the co-chair of the Web AppSec Working Group of the W3C. I don't think your description of the algorithm used by ClearClick is accurate, at least for the current implementation. It doesn't look at the opacity of the frames. It does a screenshot comparison technique where it renders the target DOM as if it would be by itself, and then looks at the viewport, you know, the composited result as seen by the user, and then compares those pixel by pixel within a certain tolerance. And it also has some checks to look at if the CSS has been used to change the cursor. So I wonder if you've looked at the bypass techniques and vulnerabilities in your paper against a more recent implementation of ClearClick and how that changes the equation.
The ClearClick vulnerabilities are fixed today. So all of these three implementations were fixed by the ClearClick developer. But when they were discovered, they were obviously not fixed. And at the time they were discovered, ClearClick checked the opacity. If the opacity value of an element is lower than 0.3, and then it said the element is almost invisible, and therefore these attacks work. So I'm not sure about the current implementation. I haven't checked it for quite some time. Could be that it's changed.
Thanks.
Hey, you mentioned a bank account that was clickjacked. So as far as most banks, they use transaction numbers, right? So you wouldn't. What would you win in that case?
Yeah, of course. This was a very simplified attack. I say, and most of the banks protect against these attacks by using TUNS and whatever. Yeah. But I think there are still a lot of things that you can clickjack and that are very critical. So I use mybank.org in order to show the criticality of these types of exploit. But there are a lot of applications that do not protect against clickjacking at all. For example, if you have an administrative interface that allows you to delete your database by just clicking a button, then this is definitely clickjackable.
I get the point that it's undesirable for you to have this clickjacking situation, but the bank isn't really the worst scenario, right?
Well, there are a lot of vulnerabilities. If you read articles on what banks are vulnerable to, there are a lot of attacks you would assume that they are not possible. So, for example, cross-site request forgery or something like that. There are a lot of examples where you can see that such banks, and perhaps it's not always the biggest banks, but there are also very small banks and other critical applications.
Or asked differently, TANs do protect me from this kind of clickjacking attack, right? For not being able to transmit money to someone else.
Yes. So what you can do with clickjacking is you can drag and drop contents. So you in some attacks you are able to drag and fill out fields, so you can fill out forms. And if you have a valid tag, for example, because you stole it somewhere, or you are able to have the mobile phone, you could still insert a 10 and conduct the attack.
Okay.